This is VOA News via remote. I'm Liz Pelfed. Russian nuclear deterrent forces are on high alert ahead of an emergency special session of the United Nations General Assembly on Monday. The UN's two major bodies will hold separate meetings Monday on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The sessions of the 193-nation General Assembly and the more powerful 15-member Security Council reflect widespread international demands for an immediate ceasefire and escalating concern for the plight of millions of Ukrainians caught up in this war. The Security Council gave a green light Sunday for the first emergency session of the General Assembly in decades. The session called to increase diplomatic pressure on Moscow over its invasion of Ukraine and after President Vladimir Putin told the Russian defense minister to put nuclear forces in a special regime of combat duty on Sunday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky has agreed to send a Ukrainian delegation to meet with Russian counterparts at an unspecified time and location at the Belarusian border for talks. Russian troops continued to battle Ukrainian defense forces and citizen soldiers for control of Kyiv, the capital, and other cities Sunday on the fourth day of the Russian invasion. In an AP interview, Kyiv's mayor Vitaly Klitschko says all routes around the city are blocked.
We can't do that because all ways is blocked.
Okay.
Always is blocked, and right now we are in the circle with everywhere the Russians.
Okay.
And we doesn't have a way to evacuate the people.
We have more on this story on voanews.com. This is VOA News. The European Union is sending fighter jets to Ukraine to counter Russia's military. The bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, told reporters Sunday that he was talking about more than just ammunition. He said, quote, "We are providing more important arms to go to a war." Australia will also provide lethal military equipment to Ukraine. The Australian government's announcement Monday gave no details on what material it may be sending. The move follows an offer on Friday of non-lethal military equipment, including medical supplies and a $3 million contribution to a NATO trust fund for support of the besieged country. The U.S. is telling citizens in Russia they should consider leaving immediately on commercial flights. Sunday, the State Department cited an increasing number of airlines canceling flights and countries closing their airspace to Russia after its invasion of Ukraine. The State Department asked U.S. officials to have a contingency plan that does not rely on U.S. government assistance. Russia's invasion of Ukraine is the biggest assault on a European state since World War II and has unleashed a barrage of Western reprisals. U.S. and European governments are imposing sanctions on Russian banks and financial institutions. The Vatican is still holding out hope for diplomacy after Russia attacked Ukraine. AP correspondent Walter Ratliff reports.
The Vatican Secretary of State released a statement on Ukraine, declaring that the tragic scenarios that everyone feared are becoming reality. The Vatican has been loath to call out Russia by name for fear of antagonizing the Russian Orthodox Church, a key focus of Pope Francis's ecumenical efforts. The statement added that there is still room for negotiation and space for the exercise of wisdom to spare the world from the folly and horrors of war. In an appeal at the end of his weekly general audience, Pope Francis said he was pained and alarmed by developments in Ukraine, which he said discredited international law. I'm Walter Ratliff.
Officials plan to install fence around the U.S. Capitol that had stood for months after the January 2021 insurrection in Washington, D.C. This time, it's for President Joe Biden's State of the Union address Tuesday. It comes as a concern grows about potential demonstrations or truck convoys snarling traffic in the nation's capital. The Capitol Police Chief says the fence will be erected around the Capitol building as a precaution. Via remote, I'm Liz Pelka, VOA News.
Today is Monday, February 28th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, U.S. officials vow to defend the homeland as President Vladimir Putin puts his nuclear forces on high alert.
For the first time ever, the European Union will finance the purchase and delivery of weapons and other equipment to a country that is under attack. This is a watershed moment.
Thousands of Ukrainians arrive in Eastern Europe after fleeing Russia's invasion.
Grabbing any form of transportation they can, many Ukrainians are crossing their borders in search of safety.
And humanitarian experts warn that more than 24 million Afghans are living on starvation diets. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. defense officials say the administration is, in their words, prepared at all times to defend the homeland and allies. This as President Vladimir Putin ordered his nuclear forces on high alert amid tensions with the West over his invasion of Ukraine. Analysts say the order means Putin wants Russia's nuclear weapons prepared for increased readiness to launch and raise the threat that Moscow's invasion and the West's response to it could boil over into a nuclear warfare. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told ABC that Putin is resorting to the pattern he used in the weeks before the invasion, which he says is, quote, to manufacture threats that don't exist in order to justify further aggression, unquote. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said the Commission plans to tighten sanctions on Russia and Belarus and fund weapons for Ukraine to help defend itself.
European Union steps up once more its support for Ukraine and the sanctions against aggressor, that is Putin's Russia. For the first time ever, the European Union will finance the purchase and delivery of weapons and other equipment to a country that is under attack. This is a watershed moment. At the same time, we're strengthening once more our sanctions against the Kremlin and its collaborator, Lukashenko's regime. First, we are shutting down the EU airspace for Russians. We're proposing a prohibition on all Russian-owned, Russian-registered, and Russian-controlled aircraft. These aircraft will no more be able to land in, take off, or overfly the territory of the European Union. This will apply to any plane, owned, chartered, or otherwise controlled by a Russian legal or natural person. So let me be very clear. Our airspace will be closed to every Russian plane, and that includes the private jets of oligarchs too. Second, in another unprecedented step, we will ban in the European Union the Kremlin's media machine. The state-owned Russia Today and Sputnik, as well as their subsidiaries, will no longer be able to spread their lies to justify Putin's war and to sow division in our union. And third, we will target the other aggressor of this war, Lukashenko's regime. Lukashenko's regime is complicit in the vicious attack against Ukraine. So we will hit Lukashenko's regime with a new package of sanctions. We will introduce restrictive measures against their most important sectors. This will stop their exports of products from mineral fuels to tobacco, wood and timber, cement, iron and steel. We will also extend to Belarus the export restrictions we introduced on dual-use goods for Russia. This will also avoid any risk of circumvention of our measures against Russia. And in addition, we will sanction those Belarusians helping the Russian war effort.
That's European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen. As fighting intensifies in Ukraine with Russian troops reportedly encircling the capital city of Kyiv amid strong resistance, the United States has announced it is sending additional military assistance, including anti-tank and air defense capabilities. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky implored the world to help his people resist a full-scale Russian invasion, saying it is imperative to hold on to the capital city, Kyiv. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
In the Ukrainian capital, Kyiv, authorities imposed a day and night curfew until Monday morning after Russian forces entered the city. Earlier Saturday, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky sought to reassure his people that he is still in Kyiv and asked them to hang on and resist Russian occupation.
I am here. We are not putting down arms. We will be defending our country because our weapon is truth. And our truth is that this is our land, our country, our children, and we will defend all of this.
Zelensky has united Ukrainians behind him, former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine William Taylor told VOA.
He is stepping up, standing up, leading his nation. People are falling in behind him. People are supporting him. Opposition leaders, civil society, the military obviously is proud to be led.
Meanwhile, hundreds of anti-war protesters braved arrest Saturday in Yekaterinburg and other Russian cities, chanting no to war. This shows that Russian President Vladimir Putin is losing the public information side of the war, Bill Browder of the Global Magnitsky Justice Campaign told VOA.
Now all the major countries have sanctioned Putin, and people in Russia are not happy about this. You have demonstrations going on in Russia. All of the apologists in the West, all the people that Putin has cultivated and paid, are all abandoning him one after the other. He's totally isolated now. Even China, his partner in this thing, are kind of trying to distance themselves from him.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken announced Saturday the U.S. will provide an additional $350 million in military assistance to Ukraine to help it defend its sovereignty. Ambassador Taylor welcomed the move.
So here's another $350 million in body armor, which is necessary to protect people as they're fighting, anti-tank weapons like the Javelins, anti-aircraft weapons like Stingers.
Pentagon officials say that so far, Ukraine is fighting back harder than Russia had anticipated. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Washington.
Tens of thousands of Ukrainians are arriving in Eastern Europe, fleeing the Russian invasion of their homeland. Experts predict 1 million and 5 million could enter the European Union in coming weeks. This time, countries such as Poland are opening doors that were previously closed to others seeking asylum. Lister Bryan reports for VOA from Paris.
Grabbing any form of transportation they can, many Ukrainians are crossing their borders in search of safety. This group of refugees is arriving in Poland by train. Others wait for hours to cross by car or walk kilometers to reach border points with Poland, Romania, and Slovakia. Ukrainian men aged between 18 and 60 are not allowed to leave. They are supposed to be defending their homeland.
We have with all the frontline member states now explicit contingency plans to welcome and host immediately those refugees from Ukraine.
European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has outlined European Union plans to support Ukrainian refugees and those internally displaced by the conflict through its humanitarian aid office, known as ECHO.
What internally displaced people are concerned, we have a lot of support through ECHO, humanitarian aid shelter, and all the necessities people who are internally displaced immediately need.
While the EU hopes there will be as few Ukrainians seeking asylum as possible, she said, Europe is prepared to welcome them. The United Nations fears that up to 5 million Ukrainians could seek refuge in neighboring countries, including up to 3 million in Poland. That is far more than there were during the 2015 migrant crisis, when 1.3 million Syrian, Afghan, and other asylum seekers from conflict-torn countries flooded into Europe. The most in a single year since World War II. Germany granted asylum to many of them. Eastern European countries such as Poland and Hungary, though, were reluctant to take them in. Hungary even built a border fence. Earlier this year, Poland also began building a border wall to prevent a new wave of Middle Eastern asylum seekers from entering from Belarus. Today's welcome is different. Poland is opening reception centers along its over 500-kilometer border with Ukraine. Poland's interior minister says Warsaw will take in all the Ukrainians who arrive. Here in France, a far-right presidential candidate, Marine Le Pen, also affirmed her support for taking in Ukrainian refugees, even as her party earlier petitioned against a massive influx of refugees from Afghanistan.
Bien sûr, on est là en plein au cœur de la Convention de Genève.
Refugee rights groups welcome today's open doors, but they are concerned about discriminatory treatment of asylum seekers. Here's Ulle Solvang of the Norwegian Refugee Council.
You know, absolutely, it's this kind of a difference in treatment is something that we fear and that we see. You know, with Ukraine, you know, perhaps there will be, you know, countries will be more inclined to keep their borders open. But we will see how this develops.
Still others fear that if the conflict in Ukraine drags on, Europe's welcome mat may be less welcoming than it is today. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Russia's invasion of Ukraine will be hotly debated during the five-week UN Human Rights Council session that begins Monday. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Heads of state and other dignitaries representing more than 140 countries will address the UN Human Rights Council over the next 3 days. Quite unusually, this high-level segment will begin with a consideration of a request from Ukraine to hold an urgent debate on the, quote, situation of human rights in Ukraine stemming from the Russian aggression. The Council's president, Argentinian Ambassador Federico Villegas, told journalists in Geneva that an urgent debate can take place as soon as the 47-member body decides to do so.
And has to make a decision according to the rules of procedure, which is a consensus or a vote with a majority of positive votes over negative votes. We had the most recent, and I'm sure you are very much aware, in 2020, Belarus was an urgent debate, and the killing of George Floyd was also an urgent debate.
Prior to Russia's invasion of Ukraine, Human Rights Watch Executive Director Kenneth Roth said he hoped the Council would immediately address the issue if war broke out, noting the Council has the capacity to help prevent war crimes.
With respect to Ukraine, I mean, I don't see it's the Council's role to try to stop a war. You know, that's the Security Council. But if war breaks out, the Council is really the leading venue to address how the war is fought. And, you know, I hope it doesn't, you know, play out this way, but if there are large-scale war crimes, then it is the Council's role to spotlight the war crimes with the aim of deterring.
During the session, the Council will consider more than 100 reports dealing with issues such as torture, forced disappearances, extrajudicial killings, and arbitrary detention. The human rights records of some 50 countries in all regions will be examined. They include Myanmar, North Korea, Syria, Ethiopia, Democratic Republic of the Congo, South Sudan, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. Human rights organizations are pressuring UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, to present a long-awaited report on China's incarceration of more than a million Uyghurs in internment camps in Xinjiang province. The United States, France, and Lithuania have denounced Beijing's wide-scale repression of Uyghurs as a genocide. China vigorously denies these accusations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The escalating conflict in Ukraine, the grinding pandemic, and as always, the economy are likely to dominate President Joe Biden's first State of the Union speech on Tuesday. Analysts say this customary presidential speech comes at an unusual time in history. VOA's Anita Powell reports from Washington.
There's not a single thing.
The constitutionally mandated address is the rhetorical highlight of the year for a U.S. president. Joe Biden is no exception. But this year's State of the Union, his first, although he has previously addressed a joint session of Congress, comes at an especially fraught time. The White House says that during the Tuesday night speech, Biden is likely to discuss Russia's invasion of Ukraine and provide his wider view of the world. Press Secretary Jen Psaki.
We're in the middle of an active invasion, so I just can't give you a preview of what that will look like in the State of the Union. As it relates to how the president views his approach to foreign policy, you know, the president has ran for president wanting to return America's seat at the world, wanting to return to a time where other leaders around the world could trust the word and the commitments of the United States. And what you have seen over the last few months is the president deliver on exactly that.
In the past week, Biden has delivered and delivered and delivered several speeches on the escalating crisis in Ukraine. Among Americans, Biden should expect a partisan split in the reaction he gets when discussing what he sees as the greatest threat to global security since World War II. Norman Ornstein of the American Enterprise Institute.
The country generally rallies behind a president when we face an international crisis. If you watch Tucker Carlson or listen to Donald Trump or know what many Republicans in Congress have been saying, we're not going to get that rallying around the president by a significant share of the population. The tribal divisions are there now for even things that affect American national security.
Presidents also use his speech to sell Congress on their domestic agenda and bills they want to pass. And there is one topic every president is expected to cover in the State of the Union address, says Jeremy Suri, a historian at the University of Texas at Austin.
Every president comments on the economy because they all want to say the state of the economy is such that we are getting richer, we are doing better than ever before. The only exceptions when presidents don't talk about the economy are when we are at war ourselves.
One thing that is certain, America and much of the world will be listening to what he has to say. The address begins at 9 p.m. in Washington on Tuesday. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
In other news, North Korea has launched a ballistic missile into the sea in a resumption of weapons tests that come as the United States and its allies are focused on Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Sunday's launch was the eighth of its kind this year. Some experts say North Korea is trying to perfect its weapons technology and pressure the United States into offering concessions like sanctions relief amid long-stalled disarmament talks. North Korea also might use the U.S. preoccupation with the Ukraine conflict to accelerate testing activity and ramp up its pressure campaign on Washington. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Humanitarian experts warn that more than 24 million people, or 59% of Afghanistan's population, are living on starvation diets and forced to take extreme measures to survive. Again, Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Eight senior emergency experts from UN and non-governmental organizations recently concluded a five-day mission to Afghanistan. They described the level of humanitarian needs as unprecedented. They say they are shocked at the enormity of human suffering they witnessed. The experts say many Afghans will not survive the dire conditions under which they are living without international support, and this, they note, is severely lacking. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports only 13% of the United Nations' $4.44 billion appeal for this year has been funded. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke tells VOA the competition for donor support from a myriad of countries, including Ukraine, Yemen, and the Democratic Republic of Congo, is intense and growing. Nevertheless, he says the plight of the Afghan people must not and cannot be ignored.
People's reserves are exhausted, forcing many into harmful coping mechanisms to survive, including child marriages and child labor. Women and girls, in particular, are affected with their human rights, participation in society, their ability to work, and access to education under threat.
Laerke says the number of people requiring life-saving assistance has risen 30% since the Taliban takeover of the country in August. He says the consequences of not responding to their needs are very stark.
It simply means that women who are pregnant will not have a hospital to go to for giving birth. We talk about girls and their access to school, but here, this means that nobody goes to school. People's need for nutrition and food will not be met. People simply won't have enough to eat. They will starve.
Laerke says donors fear that their money will go to the Taliban and not toward helping the Afghan people is unwarranted. He says all the money goes to the UN and private humanitarian organizations for which it is intended. Over the past months, he says, aid agencies have been able to scale up their operations without interference to provide life-saving assistance to people in desperate need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Human Rights Watch says older people are often the forgotten victims in Africa's conflict zones. The rights group has issued a report looking at abuses suffered by the elderly in 14 countries, mostly African nations, caught up in conflict, ranging from Mali to Ethiopia to Mozambique. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Center in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mary Malia is a 68-year-old South Sudanese woman. The mother of five says one evening in July 2016, a rebel group attacked her village in the eastern equatorial state. She says the time these people came, they came to our houses, beat us up, and took everything we had. She says while beating us, they wanted to take me. But one of them asked, where do we take this old woman? Let us leave her here. So they left me, she says. After a while, I walked on foot to Uganda without anything on me. The widow now lives in a refugee camp in northern Uganda. Malia's story is all too common in the conflict zones of Africa, where older people often have little defense against gunmen who attack rural villages. A new Human Rights Watch report entitled No One is Spared details the situation. Bridget Sleep is a senior researcher on the rights of older people at Human Rights Watch.
We found that time and again, older people were at risk of abuses during armed conflict, including summary executions, arbitrary detention, and rape. The reality of the war is that no one is spared, and that older people remain ignored and invisible victims.
Investigators say both armed groups and the government forces they often fight are responsible for the abuses. Sleep says the attackers of older people often take advantage of their physical weakness and unwillingness to leave their homes.
Older people can be at heightened or particular risk of abuse for a number of reasons. One of them is when they're unable to flee the fighting when it comes to their communities. Some choose to stay to protect their property or to protect their homes. Others are unable to run away to escape the violence, or sometimes they don't have family members who can support them and help them flee.
Even if the elderly avoid physical injury, older people can be left isolated and poor as family members flee and communities under attack disintegrate. Help Age International, an organization that stands for the rights of older people, says older people in conflict zones can suffer severe stress leading to depression and post-traumatic disorders. The group's Africa regional representative, Carol Agengo, says societies cannot forget their seniors when talking about how to cope with conflict.
Older people must be included in the pre-conflict warning signs, in the pre-conflict arrangements. Older people must be included in the discussions so that then their interests are known to the communities and the interests are also known to the warring parties. It is possible that during conflict, the harm that happens to older people could be minimized.
Older people sometimes face difficulty in accessing humanitarian assistance in displacement camps. Human Rights Watch calls on humanitarian agencies to be inclusive of older populations and make sure to meet their needs. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
The Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's premier men's basketball league to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7, FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinedu in Washington, wishing you a great day.
This is the voice of America. Washington, Bob Bumpers.